When we hear about advanced care planning, we don't often think about it in relation to younger people, but in fact that's something quite relevant to today's younger generations. Advanced care planning is a discussion between yourself, your family and your doctors about what choices and types of care will be best for you later in life. Some young people are having to discuss care planning earlier than expected, and this can be for making plans for family members or for themselves if they live with a terminal illness. I'm joined today by Project Officer Kim Grieve from the WA Cancer and Palliative Care Network at the Department of Health to find out more about advanced care planning. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us on the mic. Just a bit close to the mic, mate, if you wouldn't mind there. Now, can you start off by just giving us an idea about what advanced care planning is and kind of what it entails?
Yeah, certainly. So advanced care planning is a process, and so the process involves, you know, and it's relevant for everyone, whether you're younger or older, as you said. So having a conversation with those that are close to us, either our partner, our children, family, relatives, GP or specialist if we're under their care. And it's expressing things that are important to us, so our worries, our fears, our hopes, our dreams for the future, particularly thinking about the treatment that we would like to receive in advance in a time when we can no longer make those decisions for ourselves. So it's expressing those fears and then putting a plan in place around the care that we'd like to receive.
Is it a common occurrence for people to adopt these plans, or are many people being caught out by their own health circumstances?
I think it's something that the information and knowledge is definitely growing. It's been around since 2010. The concept sort of came into being around when we introduced the Advanced Health Directive and Enduring Power Guardianship. And so then, initially when we brought those in, we thought that was great. It was just a tool that people use. And we realised actually the tool alone is not enough. It was actually the conversation beforehand that's really important. And it's growing. I would say that still there's a lot of people out there, including health professionals, who probably for them it's a new idea, a new concept. But definitely it's growing. And I think people are now becoming particularly more aware of the need for planning ahead, particularly when life can be unpredictable. I know you said before about life-limiting illness or terminal illness, but we actually see it as something that's not so much focusing on end of life. It's more about just planning ahead when you can't make decisions. And that can be a simple thing as an accident, going in for surgery.
Sure.
So any time when you can't make a decision for yourself.
Is it important that you think that this is something that younger people need to start addressing?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the problem is when a lot of people think about advanced care planning, the first thing I think they jump to is end of life, or they think about old people. But the reality is anyone from 18, as we know, can have an accident.
Yeah.
They can have an illness.
Yeah.
Simple, like having a bike accident, having a, and also young people can have life-limiting illnesses as well. So therefore, I think for them, thinking about, what's important to them, and especially the younger generation are far more internet savvy, looking at things, like Dr. Google and becoming more informed about their health, they're actually a much more savvier culture. But also younger generation are quite often, caring for their parents or relatives, and, they're the ones that will probably be, be left looking after them in the future. So it's, that conversation with them, caring for their parents or, grandparents and, informing them is probably a, responsibility that a lot of young people have as well.
So what options are available for advanced care planning?
Yep. So, I think the first option, obviously, is having the conversation.
Yeah.
So, not everyone will necessarily want to take the next step into recording that their wishes. But I think the conversation is the first thing. The second thing is an advanced health directive. So that's a legal document that we can complete, and so we can record treatment decisions. So, any treatment that we do want, in other words, we're happy to consent to, or any treatment we don't want, we don't want to consent to, and we can put that in the advanced health directive. Once it's signed, the witness, it's a legal document that health professionals have to follow. So as soon as you lose capacity, that comes in operation and health professionals have to follow your wishes. And you can only make it while you've got capacity and make it for yourself. So that's the most important thing around, treatment. The other thing is enduring power guardianship, and that's where you nominate a substitute decision maker who can make personal lifestyle and treatment decisions. So you may not want to be prescriptive and do an advanced health directive. And for example, some people may not know what they want to write down. So therefore, they might just want to appoint someone who actually can speak on the behalf. So therefore, they can speak to the doctors, speak to the family, and actually make the decisions when it's needed. So it's appointing someone you trust. And once again, they can only speak for you once you've lost capacity.
Okay. And you spoke there about people not necessarily knowing, what they need to write down in those circumstances. What are some of the elements, the important elements that need to be considered for an advanced care plan if you're going to put one in place?
I think the most important thing is when people often ask me the same question, I say, well, why do you want to do it? What's important? So for a lot of people, they'll read the resource and they'll go, great, I understand the concept, but I don't know what to put in it. I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah.
And a classic example is my mother, who says, look, I'm very healthy. I don't know what to put in it. So the way I pitch it is, if you're very clear about what you do and don't want, and some people will be because they've already got a life-limiting or chronic illness, so they can have conceptualise a disease trajectory of what's going to happen to them, and so therefore that's easier. For everyone else who, by default is well, it can be really hard to think about. So then I think about, what's the aim of it? What's important to you? And for some people, their focus would be, I am really concerned about my quality of life and comfort. So if that's your focus, then that can be a way of pitching Advanced Health Directive. So you structure it in a way that focuses on comfort and quality. But for other people, if they can't conceptualise actually what they want to put in it, then I say to them, well, the Advanced Health Directive I don't think is for you right now.
Okay.
You can always come back to it and maybe think about enduring power guardianship, where you can at least have someone in place as yours, to speak for you. And you can always come back to the directive later. But otherwise, I think it's very much sort of pitching about, what's your focus? Is it quality, is it comfort, or you particularly focus on a particular treatment? But not everyone will have a crystal ball and necessarily think, realise what's going to happen to them.
Of course. Again, it seems like the importance of having that conversation is obviously the first step in that regard.
Yeah.
You're listening to Fit Happy on the Mag on RTRFM 92.1, and this week we're discussing advanced care planning with Kim Grieve from the WA Cancer and Palliative Care Network at the Department of Health. Now, Kim, when should advanced care planning be considered? Is there an age where we should start thinking about this, or is it more about circumstance?
I think it's never too young. So the directives, for example, enduring power guardianship and advanced health directive can only operation for when you're 18 or older. So from that way, you can only document them. But the conversation can happen any age, whether you can be too young or never too old to have a conversation to explore what your fears are. There can be a lot of younger adults, for example, who may not by definition complete an advanced health directive, but may certainly be quite clear about what they want. And so I think it's starting to have that conversation, and the conversation won't just be one conversation. It's something we can embrace and put over the coffee table around our friends, family, our culture, the school, at work. For example, the literature talks about some of the barriers of having the conversation. And number one top barrier seems to be no one likes talking about death, whether you're a health professional or you're a member of the general public. A lot of people feel uncomfortable.
Yep.
So that's why pitch advanced care planning is not just about death or dying. It's actually being proactive about planning ahead about, when you lose capacity. So you're never too young. As soon as you can start thinking about what's important to you, what your worries and fears are, then that's the time to start having the conversation.
These conversations can obviously be emotionally distressing for both those that need care and also their family members. What advice would you give people trying to navigate through that and to make the right choices?
Yeah, I agree. They certainly can be emotional. And I think the thing that I would say is, quite often people will put off having the conversations because they're emotionally distressing. But sometimes I think the longer you put things off, it's a bit like being the emu. You can put your head in the sand and you can ignore having these potential conversations. But in fact, sometimes it actually can just make it harder later on.
Yeah.
By having it early in some ways can make it easier. But for those people who generally can be vulnerable, I think it's important to consider including those people who can support them. So making sure they've got a good support network, talking to those people they feel comfortable with. It can be a spiritual advisor, it can be their GP, someone who knows them really well. And if it raises them, emotional things, I think it's making sure that you've got someone to support you, so you're not left in that, raising all those emotional baggage and then there's no one there to help you with it. That's why I think the conversation and thinking about who you really want to have those conversations with and before having them, so you feel supported.
This has been an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is an independent community radio station that relies on the public for financial support. You can subscribe online at rtrfm.com.au/subscribe.